So, welcome to the Teach Computing Podcast. Today is Saturday, the 5th of October, and we're back again at Media City in the UK for day two of Microbit Live. So Microbit Live is, I think it's the first kind of celebration of, wow, look at all this amazing stuff that's going on around the Microbit education, makers, computer scientists, software developers. And we're sat in a bit of a scary position because if I look over this balcony that I'm sat on, I could see about five floors down and there's people recording stuff for Sunday Sport here at the BBC. But I'm not sat on my own. I've managed to rope in some old friends and new friends that I've met. And I'm going to ask them to say hello to you. May we start with this gentleman on my left? Who are you?
Hello there. My name is Dominic Kelly. And I am a primary school teacher of computing in a school in southwest London called Poplar Primary School.
Ah, and how long have you been teaching computing there?
Actually, only 2 years.
Okay.
Two years, yeah. I actually started off as a parent volunteer because my kids were going to the school, and somehow, organically, I got roped into teaching the whole of Key Stage 2, so 7 to 11 year olds computing, which is what I'm doing at the moment.
Right. So everybody else took one step backwards and you were still stood there, and now you're
pretty
the computing
much, yes.
teacher.
Pretty much that was what
okay.
happened. Yeah.
And our next guest has been teaching computing for a bit longer than 2 years.
Yeah, I'm still in a primary school at
the
moment.
Who are you?
I'm Sway Grantham.
For the listeners at home, you see.
I've been teaching computing probably for 5 or 6 years now. I also work for the National Centre for Computing Education on the resources and the training that they're doing to help teachers in England.
And for those people who don't know, the National Centre for Computing Education is a consortium of Raspberry Pi, STEM Learning, and the British Computing Society, Computer Society. And it's the one thing that every computing teacher in England. And England should be going, oh my gosh, they have all these courses and all these content and all these things out there that should potentially make their life a little easier as a computing teacher. Because so many computing teachers, they feel like they're the only computing teacher in the village.
Can other people outside of England also access the resources?
They can access the resources. They can sign up with an email address to the Teach Computing website. Yeah. The content is available there. You just got to sign up.
And there's a lot of content that's freely available online through the Future Learn platform. So there's these online courses you can sign up. Some of them are things like programming using Python, and then others focus predominantly on the pedagogy of how you teach computing. And I'll be honest, it's a very nascent kind of project. Not the National Centre for Computing, the pedagogy of computing. I mean, our colleagues in maths and English and science, they've been teaching their subject for hundreds of years, and as computing teachers, we're noobs. We're still trying to find the things that work best of all. So we've heard a little bit from Dominic Kelly and Sway Grantham, and we have another guest.
Hi, I'm Sarah Bakai, and I'm in the process of starting a nonprofit, getting kids in East Africa into STEM. But I work as a data analyst at STEMETS, which gets girls into STEM careers.
You work in STEMETS?
Yeah, I just joined.
Wow. So you'll have met Anne-Maria Maffedon.
She's amazing. Yeah,
the founder of STEMETS.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this podcast and you've never heard of STEMETS before, you need to go and look it up. So STEMETS organise a whole network of events all over the country, and a lot of those ripples have gone further out beyond the country, but it's opportunities for principally girls and women to come along. But also, I mean, I'm not a girl or a woman, but I've been to a lot of those and I've brought girls and women along just to kind of get them realised that you know, technology should be more diverse, and it can be more diverse, and it's better if it is. And a lot of employers and organisations agree with the mission of STEMETS, and they might sponsor or host or contribute to that. But you're trying to set something up like that in East Africa.
Right.
Wow, sounds like you've got a big challenge on your hands.
Yes, but very grateful, as I was saying earlier, to anyone who's ever published anything about how to teach with physical computing, because I was just doing it by myself and I was like, what's the best way to go about this? There's plenty of research papers out there.
So has anybody from our group seen anything today that's really blown your mind? Going like, oh, anybody listening to this podcast should know about this thing. We can always come back to that.
something I heard Sarah's talk was that I didn't realise there was an offline editor for the Make code, for example. So thank you for that, because I'm gonna investigate that now, because I just didn't realise about that at all.
Yeah. So you've got microbits, you've got devices, but you don't have a live internet connection. There's actually an offline variant. Is there somewhere somebody could go, like, online? Would you just use a search engine to find it, or
just like Make code?
You just go to Make code. So while this is going on, I feel a bit guilty. There's actually another talk taking place by Josh Lowe. He's the 15, is he 16 now? He was 7, he was 8, now I think he might be 16. I think even next year he might even be 17. But he's the young founder of another visual block-based programming IDE or editor called EduBlocks. And I think also EduBlocks will also operate in an offline mode as well. Right. And you're wishing now you'd stayed and listened to Josh talk about this. But Josh will be around for most of today. And EduBlocks, EduBlocks, and I think it's EduBlocks.org. I'm sure, but you might have to load it into your browser first and then you can use it. But
There's also one of the talks I remember from yesterday, and something I'm going to be talking about today, actually, briefly, is... about MicroBlocks, which is an application you can download, and then it connects to your microbit, and you can effectively live code from MicroBlocks onto the microbit. So John Hegarty from Clongo School in Ireland was talking about it yesterday and demonstrating it. So that could be something as well that you could use offline. Quite useful as well.
I'm a bit embarrassed. I've only recently kind of caught on to what John Hegarty was doing, and yesterday he led a workshop here, and it was like, objectively you could say it seemed like there was bedlam going on, but it was a lot of creativity and noise, and people were programming all sorts of, and we did mention that a little bit yesterday in the podcast. You know, when you mentioned this thing that you just said, did you call it MakeBlocks?
MicroBlocks.
Oh, MicroBlocks.
Yeah, MicroBlocks.
What might be the device? Is it like Android?
It's been developed by a very small team so far.
Okay.
Led by John Maloney, who of Scratch.
Right.
And
so browser based, is it?
No, it's an application.
Okay.
So you download the application, so it on, you know, Windows, Mac. They've just developed a Chromebook version as well. And you download it, and then you've got it on your computer or whatever, and you don't need to be online.
I mean, it is great that we've got all these choices of different editors to choose from, and sometimes it can be the amount of choice, it can be a little bit bewildering or overwhelming, you know, which one is the best one to go to. In fact, I've seen so many add-on boards for the microbit, and some tiny little ones and then some huge ones that expand into different ways. Dominic, you're nodding your head like
Back at school, we've just, in the code club that I'm running at the school, we've just started this term. There's the Global Challenge that's run by the Microbit Foundation.
Do you mean do your bit?
Yeah, do your bit.
So ARM and Microbit together run a competition called Do Your Bit. And it's a global competition. It's not just meant for England. But it's focusing on the global challenges or global priorities.
So it's focusing on two, land and water. And so what I'd already done at school was, with the kids, identified local issues that they wanted to try and solve. Yeah. So, for example, there's a small pond in our nature area, and the kids are worried that there isn't enough oxygen for fish, for example. So they want to create a sensor that alerts people to when we need to put more oxygen
or change it.
So I'm really interested in, for example, a talk yesterday by Celeste Moreno from the Laboratory for Playful Computation at the University of Colorado. But she was talking about projects that they'd done about sensors in gardens and around plants and things like that. So I took quite a lot from that. But you're right, there seems to be loads of sort of sensor options available. And I suppose I'm trying to lap that all up to then take back and use it on my code.
And I suppose when I was saying it's like can be a bit overwhelming, it's that what if you buy, because schools have very limited budgets. I imagine budgets are quite tight. Where, you know, if you're setting up a non-profit, East Africa, you haven't got millions you can spend on these acquisitions. What if you choose the wrong kit? What if you've bought the wrong thing? What if you then realise later on that it's not being supported anymore? So there's that kind of challenge as well.
But which is really helpful that these that Celeste and other people are offering to stay in touch, because hopefully I and others can then use her experiences to make more informed decisions about what to buy and what not to buy.
I think the climate activism, I think that's quite a useful area for a project to focus on, and there's certainly a lot of different options to go down. So yesterday I did a talk here, and I started off by talking about Greta Thunberg and how, you know, in some ways we might, or young children might be inspired, you know, here she is, this young climate activist. But there's other ways that we can raise attention and change people's habits, and some of them, as you were talking about, just little local experiments in, you know, measuring the climate around the school.
As another example, which hopefully I'm going to find out what a good sensor for this is, one of the kids came up with an idea about there's a main road on the way into walking for kids into school, but there are other ways to get there, so they want to come up with a project to measure the level of air pollution for the different routes, so they can tell their parents which is the healthier way to get to school, for example.
And I think that also leads into some other very nice things like PSHE, which is just about making the right kind of choices. Are we doing it for an economic choice? Is it because we haven't got a lot of time, so we need to get to school quickly? Or is it, oh, well, we can spend all our money on this? And then when we talk about cost, what do we really mean? Do we mean cost to the planet, cost to our pockets? Do you think there's a danger that there's too many of these add-on boards? Do you think there's a problem with that?
I mean, my concern is always, what are we going to do with it? You know, how is it going to help teaching and learning beyond the one project? If I'm investing in anything in my school, I need to know that I'm going to be able to use it probably with multiple year groups, and that it's going to benefit learning. It's not just a gimmick that is used for a short while. So one of the things I was really interested in, there was a talk earlier, and they had how they design the project and the prototyping processes, and how they iterate and get better at designing a project, and how that takes you through from the beginning through to the end of the project cycle, so you can improve that stage of learning as well.
I think you shared a photograph on Twitter. So there's some images of some worksheets that what they attempt to do is to sort of channel the children's thinking along a particular sort of process, which provides a form of structure, doesn't it? Rather than just this oh, it could be anything, you know. And some children do need that structure. I mean, I, as an adult, I need kind of pointing in the right direction at times. There's another thing that worries me, though, a little bit. I don't know if you've got something to contribute to this. I think as computing teachers, we do sometimes get a little bit mesmerized by the packaging, the presentation. We pick up this board, it's like, oh wow, look, it's purple and it's so bright and shiny. And we sometimes fall into that trap of falling in love with something just because of the appearance of the board, without, as you said, without thinking about, well, hang on, do we really need another add-on board for the micro bit?
Yeah, I agree that there is a certain amount of that, but if we as adults are doing that, then you can be pretty sure that your kids are going to feel exactly the same way. And if they're actually motivated to then try and get it to work, then you are actually winning that battle in a way. Maybe as teachers, we also need to keep in the back of our minds that, you know, the more mundane considerations, such as cost and does it fit into the curriculum and stuff like that.
But there is also sort of this dichotomy, the conflicting argument that, you know, if we're doing a project on climate activism and we're asking people to change their habits, and we've bought all these new things and we're going to 3D print all this stuff, it seems like a conflict there, that we're trying to get people to think more about overproduction and waste, and here we are just buying a load of new stuff that we might not actually need, and it could be in a cupboard in a little while. Do you think that there's a danger as well if we're become obsessed about the platforms, the software editor and the kit, that we sometimes forget what it is that the children are supposed to be learning? Like, why are we actually doing this in the first place?
Yeah, and I think you spoke about it yesterday in terms of like weapons of mass instruction. And it's like, but I very much need to have read everything about it and research and plan the lessons just as a teacher to be more confident in that. But to what you were saying in terms of the platform and exciting features, I think that's great if it gets the kids more interested to use it. but then sometimes they can see like one or two might be intimidated and be like, I don't know, the computer's smarter than I am, like how do I engage with this? But yeah, that's where lesson plans help in getting them into a structure.
I suppose it's all about balance, isn't it? About because 20 years ago I was involved in a project across Merseyside and they called it Innovation and Education, and it was very open-ended, and they just gave us a few thousand pounds to do whatever you want and would ask your students to do, and it was like go around, feel the environment and think that you're in and come up, and the children were like, what do you want us to do? Oh no, you go out and find projects to work on. And the children could, but like, because in all their other lessons there was this structure, you must do this, you must get this assignment done, and it must have this and it must include that, which some people might say was being heavily spoon-fed. And then we were saying, ooh, go explore. And it's so, it is certainly about the balance. Have you formed any opinion, have you seen any evidence of pedagogy, well, really, like the science of teaching, the craft of teaching and learning, while we've been at this event? Or do you think it's all about kit and resources?
So there was a talk on yesterday from, I can't remember the chap's name, Rob Lehman.
Yes, with a beard. Yeah, that's Rob.
He was talking about what ARM have done in terms of the pedagogy of teaching and supporting that and creating lots of resources. Now, he didn't show many, so he talked around it rather than going into detail about it. But yes, I think it has been mentioned. Maybe not. I mean, there are other people here, I suppose, apart from teachers. But maybe it hasn't been mentioned as much as it could have been.
And you mentioned in you did a lightning talk before, and you mentioned Sue Sentence. Was it the PRIM methodology in particular?
Everything that she published. just to sort of understand how microbits are being used, or any physical computing is being used elsewhere, what the challenges were, like how can I, if I'm doing a workshop, plan ahead. But I was going to say, I found your talk interesting in terms of nationwide, and you spoke about a research study about women or girls in STEM.
Yep.
Has the results been published for that?
No, it's literally in the early piloting stages, but as part of the NTC work, they're looking at a gender balance project of how we can engage more girls and young people to get involved in tech and to see their future careers being in tech, but early days, yeah.
I'm excited to hear how that works, because so much of that then informs like how we should teach. Yeah.
Did you see this study that was published from Roehampton last year, or was that this year? I'm trying to think of the name. It escapes me at the moment. It's the pressure of pressing the record button. So there was a study that was published from out of Roehampton last year, which gave some encouraging, but then results, but then also the some things for us to ponder and explore. And it's the, as a teacher, you know, that's the one, the annual computing education report, yeah? So the challenges as a teacher, you know, if you've got girls in your classroom, is it the girls that you need to change the thinking of, or is it the boys in the classroom, the way that they behave? Is it, you know, where should we be focusing our activity? Is it the parents? Because, like, if you teach in your Key Stage 2 class, through your project, if you're seeing those children for 1 hour a week, but then they've been exposed to, 8 hours at home of brothers who are like, no, sister, move out of the way. This is about, sort of those stereotypical kind of phrases. It can be quite difficult to change that thinking.
I think one of the interesting things with some of the gender research I've been reading recently is that if you ask girls and young people, even like older teens that we know are less likely to join in with those sort of activities, how they feel about computing, they report as much engagement and confidence levels as the boys all the way through, but they're still not choosing to take it as a GCSE or an A-level. So it's interesting to sort of explore why that happens when they're saying they're engaged, they're enjoying the subject equally to boys.
Right, we can wrap this up if that's okay with you. So you've been listening to
Sarah Bakai.
And if people want to engage with you on Twitter, you have a Twitter handle.
It's Sarah, SARABERKAI.
Thank you, Sarah. And
Sway Grantham.
And how would
at
people...
Sway Grantham on Twitter. Yeah.
And I think you have a website as well, do you?
SwayGrantham.co.uk as well.
Okay. Your project, does that have a web presence yet?
No, it's coming.
It's going to come, yeah.
And Dom Kelly from Poplar Primary School. And I'm afraid I don't really have a social presence.
There's nothing to say that you have. You do now have a social presence.
Well, yes, I suppose, yeah. Yes. A digital social presence.
Thank you all very much, and enjoy the rest of Microbit Live. And if there's one next year, I hope to see you at one of those as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan.
Oh, we've got music.
To play us out.
To play us out.